A few weeks ago, I had the wonderful opportunity to spend a week up at Lake Ranch, which is an ecumenical study center in Dubois, Wyoming. In a casual discussion with a Presbyterian colleague, she expressed her dismay with David Brooks, who writes for the New York Times and the Atlantic and does commentary on the PBS NewsHour. Now, Brooks is the nominally conservative voice in those typically liberal settings, although I think there are a lot of people who probably don't consider David Brooks to be conservative anymore. But I always tried to read his commentaries. Not because I always agree with him, but because he almost always has something important to say. The article that upset my friend was in this month's Atlantic, and it's called How America Got Mean. And the subtitle is, in a culture devoid of moral education, generations are growing up in a morally inarticulate, self-referential world. So part of my friend's objection is the church throughout the ages often has played the finger-wagging role of the moralizer in American society. You can have morals without being a moralizer, just like you can have an opinion without being opinionated. And we've seen how it plays out in ways that you and I probably find repugnant, especially around issues of sexual orientation, social justice, and women's rights. Brooks writes, we would never want to go back to the training methods that prevailed for so long, rooted in so many thou shalt nots, and so much shaming, and riddled with so much racism and sexism. Yet a wise accounting, he says, should acknowledge that emphasizing moral formation meant focusing on an important question. What is life for? What is life for? And teaching people how to bear up under inevitable difficulties. A culture invested in shaping character helped make people resilient by giving them ideals to cling to when times got hard. And don't we all need a little more resilience? Brooks's article made me wonder how we, the United Church of Christ, and also how we here at Plymouth have done in terms of moral formation, not just for our young people, but for us grown-ups as well. You know, the second step in our three-phase mission statement is where moral transformation and moral formation lives, inviting, transforming, and sending. Every one of us is ripe for spiritual and for moral growth, whether we're 6 or whether we're 96. I think what we do in the progressive church does have something to say about moral life. And we're at a critical moment in our nation's history as meanness, isolation, self-centeredness, unfettered dog-eat-dog capitalism, and a patent disregard for our fellow humans and for the precious planet that God has entrusted to us have become culturally normative. What we have to say may sound vastly different than what other Christians have to say. The church as a whole, and Plymouth in particular, are in a unique position to help engage a journey of countercultural transformation that moves people in the opposite direction of those unwelcome social norms. Our mission here at Plymouth includes a strong commitment to social justice, but it's more than that. Our mission includes spiritual connection to God and one another, but it's more than that. Our faith has a lot to say about the biggest questions that we ask about what gives life meaning, how to find joy rather than simple self-satisfied happiness, how we're meant to relate to one another and be responsible stewards of God's world and the wealth that God has entrusted to us. If the voice of progressive churches like our own don't fill the vacuum in that moral void. It will be filled by other voices. It'll be filled by the siren song of advertising that lures us toward the rocks of capitalistic ruin. The cry of I, me, mine will drown out we, us, ours. The out of balance individualism that takes no account of the other will win out over the value of real community. Here's what's filling the vacuum. David Brooks points out that 74 million people saw the former president's morality and saw presidential timber. That's a strong barometric reading of the moral outlook of a lot of Americans. And I find that even more telling and more worrying than the individual morality of the former president. So, my friends, as progressive Christians, where do we turn for a moral compass? What are the values that you hope to inculcate in our youth, in our kids, in ourselves, and in the overall culture in which we live? For me, the words of Jesus in the Beatitudes, in the 6th chapter of Luke and the 5th chapter of Matthew, are absolutely central. And I even think our old friend, the Apostle Paul, has some wisdom for us in this morning's reading. Hear what he has to say. Let love be genuine. Or as another translation puts it, love should be shown without pretending. This is self-giving love. This is agape love, not sentimental or romantic love. Genuine love is costly love, love that means sometimes you put another person's needs ahead of your own. Genuine love means being willing to sacrifice something for the good of the other. Hate what is evil and hold fast to what is good. You know, I think we can get caught up in trying to put our fingers on what evil is and what is evil. So you might want to just focus your energy on giving that energy to what is good that encourages growth in people, in communities, and in creation. Love each other with mutual affection. That's one translation. And Paul uses the Greek word Philadelphia, brotherly love. So I think that a good modern English parallel might be love one another as if you were family. I see that happening at Plymouth all the time. And not just within the membership of this congregation, but for people who are experiencing homelessness, for refugees, for immigrants, and even for CSU graduate students. Do not lag in zeal, Paul says, and be ardent in spirit and serve the Lord. In other words, put your faith into practice. Don't just say one thing and then go do something else. So there's an involvement fair out there today that invites you to become active in something that moves your faith forward. Paul knows that part of the human condition is suffering, but he isn't satisfied to just leave it at that. Rather, he encourages us to have hope, to be patient, and to keep on praying. He doesn't say whether prayer changes God or whether prayer changes us. But my experience is that it helps in either case. Extending hospitality to strangers may be a foreign concept to those of us who have been born and raised in North America, but it was a key value in the ancient Near East. When somebody shows up at your door, you welcome them, you feed them, you offer them a place to rest. Part of what we strive to do at Plymouth is to offer an extravagant welcome to our guests on Sundays and also to provide a warm, home-like welcome to our faith family hospitality guests who are experiencing homelessness. Paul encourages us to support one another financially. Generosity is a critically important value that doesn't get much play in American culture. where we tend to focus not so much on what we can give as what we can get. And I see something deeply countercultural happening in this congregation as we are exceptionally generous in supporting Plymouth's ministry and mission, and even through sharing the plate that we do each month. So let's boil all of that down. That's a big laundry list. Paul is talking about loving one another. It's all about love. It's about costly love. You know, we all say that we want community, but it doesn't form without genuine, costly love. And here's an important caveat. Whether you're looking at Paul's list in Romans or whether you're looking at Jesus's Beatitudes, nobody does this stuff perfectly. So it's better to focus on practice, not perfection. You know, yesterday here at Plymouth, I saw something that I have never seen before in person. Along with 40-some pistols and rifles, two assault weapons came into our gun buyback. And I looked at them after the barrels had been sawed into pieces and after the rest of the weapon was disassembled. I was looking at them in a big Rubbermaid container. And I thought about Columbine, and I thought about the theater in Aurora, and I thought about the King Supers in Boulder, and it's heartrending to see these weapons and to think that they were designed for one purpose: killing human beings who are created in the image of God, in the image of love. The work our partners at Raw Tools does is a shining example of the kind of moral education and moral engagement that David Brooks is talking about. It actually does take a village to raise a child. It actually does take a village to stand up and try to end gun violence. It actually does take a village to create systemic change. It actually does take a village to embody a community whose hallmarks are faith, love, justice, peace, generosity, and welcome. David Brooks concludes, "Healthy moral ecologies don't just happen. They have to be seeded and tended by people who think and talk in moral terms, who try to model and inculcate moral behavior, who understand that we have to build moral communities because on our own, we're all selfish and flawed. Moral formation is best when it's humble. It means giving people the skills and habits that will help them to be considerate to others in complex situations of life. It means helping people behave in ways that make other people feel included, seen, and respected." My friends, welcome to our village. Amen.